Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio. On the line, we have Jane Kanigi, who is a spokesperson for the campaign group Save Westernport. And basically, what has kind of happened, I guess, in the past week is there has been a bit of a victory for the environment movement, where essentially there was a controversial gas project put forward by AGL, which is supposedly in Westernport, which is apparently was supposed to be one of the biggest kind of gas terminal that could be built, and it was proposed to be built at Crib Point. It's a kind of an amazing kind of victory that the project has been rejected by the Victorian Planning Minister and the Victorian State Government. So, yeah, we're going to be having a bit of a discussion with Jan about the kind of background to this and the background to the whole victory. So, yeah, good morning, Jan.
Good morning, Jacob, and thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah.
It is, as you said, an extraordinary victory. As you can appreciate, those of us that have been in this campaign now, some for 3 years plus, me for over 2.5 years, we are just over the moon, ecstatic beyond belief. You know, our feet really haven't hit the ground yet. We can't quite believe it. But it is an amazing outcome to an extremely long campaign.
And I guess to start off, especially for listeners who might not be, I guess, aware much about this proposal, can you give us a bit of a background on what this terminal proposal was, and then so that we can then go proceed to talking about the campaign and the story
Absolutely.
Of how it was won?
Absolutely. Essentially what AGL proposed, and I'm sure all your listeners know who AGL is, they were proposing to build an import terminal where we would have like the equivalent of a floating gas factory known as an FSRU, or floating storage regasification unit, and that will be moored permanently at Crib Point in the heart of Westernport Bay for over 20 years. And then visiting LNG carriers, that is carrying liquid nitrogen gas, natural gas I should say, would come alongside this FSRU, would dump their liquid form of gas into the heart of the ship. And then what the ship would do would be to regasify it. And that regasified gas would then flow along a new pipeline that had to be built by another company called APA, a new 57-kilometre pipeline through some very significant wetland and important fragile flora and fauna areas. And in the process of actually regasifying the gas, what would happen is that the ship would draw water from Westernport Bay and in huge quantities, over 480 million litres of water will be taken out of the bay every single day, and that includes all of the, you know, the benthic habitat as it's known, all of the plankton, the microorganisms, the fish eggs, the baby fish, all of that would get drawn into the ship, and then that water will be used as a coolant in the process of turning the liquid form of gas into a gas, and chlorine would be added to that water in the process. Of course, chlorine being an extremely toxic chemical, and then that water would be discharged back into the bay with the chlorine and other toxicants, and it would also be 7 to 8 degrees colder than the ambient temperature of the bay. So I think anyone with, you know, half a brain about the ecological impact, the environmental impact of such a process could see how dangerous this particular idea was. I mean, how it really got off the drawing board, I don't know, but it certainly got off the drawing board, and we had to fight it very hard. So that, in essence, is the process that would have happened. And as I said, Jacob, if it had gone ahead, this could have happened day in, day out for up to 20 years. Also, of course, ensuring that we had gas in this form for the next 20 years as well. So that has another sort of issue attached to it, as I'm sure you appreciate.
And what can you tell us, I guess, about the story of the campaign in terms of, like, the type of kind of support that was built up in opposition to this gas terminal?
Look, a really good question. I think, if you know, in a nutshell, if I could start at the beginning, I certainly wasn't there at the very beginning, but there were some people in the community who'd heard about this proposal, and I think AGL did a first sort of spin on it, and they went along to it, and they were deeply concerned when they heard what the process was, how long it would be, what the impacts were. These were people, just ordinary members of the community, but who had clearly heard something that they did not think was relevant or appropriate to the sort of community that we have, the environment that we live in, and it's, you know, the really fragile nature of the ecosystems of Western Port Bay. So they set in train sort of building up a new organisation, which they called Save Western Port, which actually is a name that goes back more than 50 years. There were original environmentalists way back 50 years sort of fighting other sort of proposals, not quite on the scale of this, but pretty hard-hitting proposals that would have hurt the environment. And then they called meetings and got people together and really spread the word. It was really about educating our community about this potential impost on us and what the ramifications would be. And, of course, as soon as you heard about what the project was going to be, really everyone was deeply, deeply concerned. And so it sort of built in amongst the community. More and more people got involved, and, you know, we were out there all the time. Every time there was a market or, you know, any sort of public gathering, we'd get there. We had stickers. We'd talk to people. We'd educate them. And then we started to build out into other organisations, both here locally around Western Port, including those on Phillip Island, French Island, other groups that had fought other battles on the environment. And also Environment Victoria came on board, and that was just amazing because they really have such strong campaigning skills, and we built a collaboration with Environment Victoria, with the Victorian National Parks Association, and just, as I said, with multiple groups, some of them not environment groups, just community groups really concerned about their community. We have a UN biosphere that's situated here in Western Port because of the ecological and environmental significance of Western Port Bay. They, you know, were really concerned about it. Our council, which was part of the actual process for a long time, so we never really quite understood where they stood. But once the material was out there for everyone to look at, they had a really good long analysis of that material, and the Mornington Shire Council came on board 100% in saying that this project should not go ahead. It was inconsistent with the values of the community. It was inconsistent with the environmental safeguards that we need for Western Port Bay. And so we built this really broad coalition, and I think that's been really, really important. Of course, you know, there may still be many people in Melbourne listening to your show that were unaware of this. And, you know, that's the sort of situation we're in. Of course, we did a lot of this under COVID, which made it even more difficult because, of course, we were part of Greater Melbourne down here. We couldn't move beyond 5 kilometres. And so some of our campaigning was certainly stymied when we were all in lockdown together. But even then, this process went on. So just in a nutshell, the planning minister, Minister Wynne, did agree back in 2018 that this was a project that did need what's called an EES, or an Environmental Effects Statement, which is our principal environmental process for projects like this. And then the proponents, they put together something like 11,000 pages of materials trying to justify this project. We were given access to that at the beginning of July, and then we had from July until close to the end of August to not only try and read all this material, but to analyse it and then pull it apart, identify the flaws, the omissions, the fundamental issues with the project, and put our submission together. That was an open process, so thousands of people actually put submissions in. In fact, it was the biggest public participation in a process like this ever held. There were over 6,000 submissions, all done under COVID, that went in. And, of course, 99.9% of those were against this proposal. I could go on. We then had hearings. And they took place in our second major lockdown in October last year, right through leading up to Christmas. So we had 10 weeks of hearings. That was all done via Zoom. And so that in itself was something that most of us have never really participated in. But it did go extremely smoothly. It was a very harrowing process, excuse me, because AGL, you know, put their top-notch lawyers onto this, and it was, you know, really adversarial. We had over 400, 500 individuals and organisations that actually made submissions to the hearings, so they appeared before the IAC, and they gave their evidence as to why essentially the process, you know, the project should not go ahead. So it's been, you know, really 3 years of fighting this, and it just building and building and building. But at the end of the day, it was the process that we had to try and win on, and that's what we have achieved.
Well, can I just ask, Jane, it seems to me that pumping out 500 million litres a day of chlorinated water that's colder than the surrounding water would mean that there would be plumes of this chlorinated water working its way in various directions away from this floating storage and regasification unit and kind of nuking the seafloor. And then my understanding is chlorine is a gas, so it would kind of percolate and find its way up and sort of spread right through the water, turning that whole area into a like a giant open-air swimming pool. And you're across the water from French Island. It's near Phillip Island with the penguins. Like, the, as you point out, this whole area is really pristine.
I know. It's insane. I mean, when you think about it, you've put it so precisely, Jacob. And, of course, it was, in fact, those environmental effects. You know, we argued against the project on so many different levels. Obviously, the principal one was these environmental effects in relation to the impact on the ecosystems from the both the intake of the water, killing off everything that's coming into the ship, into the FSRU, and then spewing out this dead, toxic, chlorinated water. And if you examine the minister's decision on this, it is essentially that which was seen as to be the most significant and overriding environmental impact, and one which AGL really could not. They had, you know, that despite everything they tried to do to say it would all be okay, they couldn't produce evidence to say that it would, because, you know, anyone that's ever been in a chlorinated pool knows why you put chlorine in a pool. It is to kill the bacteria, to kill anything that's in the pool. And so this is what the minister found, that the discharge of the chlorine and chlorine-produced oxidants, which are toxic to the environment, were too dangerous, that the change in the water temperature was too dangerous, and that the loss of the plankton and the fish and the entrainment of the if you like, the underpinning ecosystem of the marine environment was too significant. And the thing is that, as again, I think some of your listeners would know, I mean, Western Port Bay is internationally recognised. It's a Ramsar environment. There are only 9 of these in Australia. And so the fact that something as dangerous and dirty and as toxic as this could be even considered to go into such an environment. It really is extraordinary. And the fact that we had to fight it tooth and nail to ensure that it didn't happen, I think also sort of says something. But look, the outcome, it is an outcome which is beyond our dreams. I mean, many of your listeners may well have been involved in EES processes, and they are extremely difficult for communities. They really are. I mean, we put it that, you know, we were the David against the Goliath, and somehow we won. But we won on the science. You know, we employed experts to, because we ourselves, we're just community members, you know, we don't have that level of expertise. And of course, in that 11,000 pages that they threw at us, you know, it was full of all sorts of material that, you know, is way over my head and so many others in the community that were fighting us. So we had to find funds to employ experts, to employ our own lawyers, to fight this in these hearings that I said happened late last year. And that's one of the other things. So it wasn't just that, you know, all of our community was on side with us, but people in the community found different sort of almost organic ways to help support us. So in the middle of this lockdown, you know, a group of people got together, you know, they'd come to us and they understood the importance of fighting this proposal. And they got together, artists, and they had an online auction of artists who, some of many of whom have a really close connection with Western Port, others didn't, but they certainly support, you know, trying to ensure that the environment is protected. And so it was incredible, really, some really famous artists, others not so famous. And some of these artists donated their work. The people putting this together donated their time, and they raised a lot more money than we were collecting in buckets, if I could say that. And that helped pay for the legals that we had to do to fight this. And so, you know, that was part of the sort of organic process that was just so, I mean, it's really so heartening for those of us that were sort of almost working on this full time, just to know how much support there was, how much that what we were doing is what our community wanted. And if I could say also, I mean, it's for all Victorians. I mean, Western Port Bay is a public asset. It belongs to the people of Victoria. And it certainly shouldn't have been polluted with the profit of one company. It's been an extraordinary experience, really heartening in terms of the fact that there are so many people out there who believe in the same things that we do, who are prepared to fight for those. And often they don't win. I mean, that's the reality. But in this case, I think the minister, the independent advisory committee that was appointed to go through not only all the submissions, but, you know, sat before the hearings, and they certainly listened to all the evidence, and they weren't fooled by the spin of AGL, and I think that's sort of saying something. I obviously haven't had time to read their reports, two volumes. As I said, our feet really haven't hit the ground. We obviously have to go through it in a lot of detail, pull out, you know, the salient points and analyse the outcome from that point of view, but that's for another day.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Jan. You've given like a really sort of good sort of overview, because I think, you know, one of the things we also like to cover is, you know, it is actually worth getting a bit of reflection and a sense of the campaign's experiences, which I always thought was very good. We're running a bit out of time now, so I just wanted to guess, do you have any guest final comments you'd like to make?
I really just want to say that for everyone that, you know, believes in protecting the environment, that's deeply concerned about climate change. You know, ours was one battle, if you like. It was a really, I mean, it was a very significant win. But obviously, you know, there's so much more that we need to keep doing. And we will certainly keep doing that simply because we've won this. You know, that we want to make sure that Western Port's protected, if you like, for all time, and obviously use our experience to help others.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Jen.
Yeah. Congratulations, Jane. It's
thank
really
you. Look, it's everyone. I mean, I this was the most collective effort. I've never been involved in a process like this before, and it's extraordinary. It really was. And so, for every single person that supported what we were trying to achieve, for every person that was part of the process. And for every person out there that thinks this is a good outcome, we thank you because, you know, without all of that support, we never would have got over the line.
Word.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on our program. And, yeah, I think congratulations on all the work that your campaign has done. And congratulations again for, I think, this amazing victory.
Thank you very much, Jacob, and thank you so much for having me on the program.
Hi. Okay.
Thank you. All the best.
All Cheers. The best.